This is The Forgetting.
Part of my journey is to try to educate people that the stereotypes of this disease are horribly wrong. It's not the end stage, it's the journey in getting there. Then I notice there's this poor little 80-year-old woman who's following me around. And this is terrible, okay? So now you realize that I'm just a shithead. I'm not a good guy. And I turned around and I said to her, in my loss of felt, I go, "What the fuck do you want?" At the airport, I gave the driver a 50% tip and apologized profusely. And he turns to me and he said, "Not to worry." And I said, "Well, I really feel bad." And I said, "You know, I deal with Alzheimer's." He looks me right in the eye. There's a direct quote. And he goes, "I know. I could tell. It's in my family, too. And I'm afraid one day that it will attack me. You take care." And we hugged each other and went our separate ways.
What a sweet guy.
This is the depression that you get into. So there was a car. It was at night, and it was coming, and the lights were on. I started leaning into the headlight, and something, you could decide how you want to say it, pulled me back.
From WCAI Studios in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, this is The Forgetting, a podcast about dementia. I'm David Shank, author of the book The Forgetting and senior advisor to an international research consortium called Cure Alzheimer's Fund, which helps make this podcast possible. And with me, as always, is my friend and co-host Greg O'Brien, author of On Pluto, Inside the Mind of Alzheimer's. His book has that subtitle because Greg has early onset Alzheimer's. And he is committed to reporting his experience for as long as he possibly can. That's why this podcast exists. Okay, so a couple of things about this podcast that make it unique. First of all, Greg, it has been a year and a half, not since we spoke, but since we spoke on air. Our last podcast, this is episode number 13. Number 12 was recorded way back in October of 2017. So we have a lot to catch up on for our listeners.
If you say so.
Right. You probably
you could tell me anything, you know.
Right. Well, that's what my screen tells me.
How do I know? I need to look at the engineer in there to see if David is right. He's giving me, it was either a finger or a thumb.
We're getting a thumbs up on those facts. So let me say a few things. It's also the first podcast that we're recording since we started releasing the podcast to the public. So you and I now have a sense, and we'll talk about this in a few minutes, of how people are responding to the podcast. And I'm happy to say that it really seems to be resonating with people. So we'll get to that in a minute. And finally, I'll talk about this more at the end of our episode, but this is the end of what we're calling season one of the podcast. And we're calling it season one because there is going to be, it seems, a season two. We're going to start recording again in a few months, and we're going to record a whole nother set, about a dozen more, we think, conversations, and call that a second season, as long as Greg is able and as long as I am able. And that's because this has really turned out to be everything we hoped it would be. Both, it has a lot of meaning for Greg, it has a lot of meaning for me, and most importantly, we really seem to be getting some meaningful response. It seems to be touching people and providing some meaning in their lives, which is what this is all about. Right, Greg?
That's right, if you say so.
Well, since we're on that topic, let's start for just a moment. I know that you've heard from some listeners about who've heard some of our previous episodes, and tell me about what they've said to you. You've been approached and contacted.
Well, it's very encouraging because I've heard from people from different places across the country and some foreign countries, and they've said that the podcast has resonated with them about the journey, and they can see their own lives or the lives of loved ones through that and can better understand this journey. And I told you, you know, a long time ago that on Pluto wasn't about me or my family. And yes, as you know, I lost my maternal grandfather, my mother, my paternal uncle and father to Alzheimer's, which now has come for me, but that I saw this journey as a window for the baby boom generation, that they could look through my window and see things in their own lives in this disease that we need to bring out of the closet and talk more openly about.
And the reason that I wanted to do this podcast in the first place is that I've been writing about, reporting, researching, trying to communicate about Alzheimer's for almost 20 years, and I've never met anyone who is as candid as you are and who is as articulate as you are about, who actually has the disease, who can actually speak to us from the inside. And on top of all that, you and I became great friends, and I just like talking to you. So it's this is an excuse for me to get together with you.
I'm still not going to date you, David. Okay, that's off the table.
All right, I tried. I'm trying different angles.
I'm just saying it's off the table.
So let's talk. You and I have talked a lot in the last year and a half because we're close friends, but our listeners haven't heard from you in real time in a year and a half in calendar time. So let's catch them up on what's changed for you. Let's start with, you're still around.
For the most part,
you look great. It's great to be in the same studio with you, which is a little bit of a rarity. It's usually that we're in different cities and talking through wires. But here we are. I got to spend the night in your house last night, which was a real treat.
We're still not dating.
Separate room, separate beds. But so you look good. I can see some decline, though, certainly. We're all about being candid. You're an older man. You're a little bit of a slower individual. I've seen you have some real... you've talked a lot about the cognitive difficulties, but I've seen some new impairments. You and I were talking last night at dinner, and we were talking about you need to sell your house for financial reasons, and we were talking about the numbers around that transaction, and you were having, I don't think you noticed this the way I did, but you were having some problems talking about numbers in the correct way. You were saying 4,000 instead of 400,000, you know, that kind of thing. And little things that... Anyone can make mistakes, but when you know what this disease looks like, you know what to look for. I was noticing that, and you still tell amazing stories, but
I have to write them down.
You're having to get better at writing them down and refer to those notes. I'm going to let you talk in a second, but let me just finish this one more observation, which is that I have noticed much more of you. I tell you a story, and then you ask me an hour later or a day or two later, did we talk about this? And we had a really deep conversation about that particular thing, and I have to remind you that we did, and we kind of go over it again. So I'm noticing that more and more.
And you usually end it by saying dumbass.
Yeah, no, I'm being polite to you now in a way that you and I know that we're not polite to each other when we turn the microphone off. But you know what? That's our private relationship.
I still love you, so.
I love you more than ever. So from your perspective, can you talk about what the last... It may be difficult for you to even encompass a year or a year and a half in your memory, but what do you see as the last year or in decline?
It's a horrific ongoing progression that kicks the shit out of you. And I don't want anyone's pity. I'm trying to explain it in ways that people might understand it, so they might better understand a loved one or friend who's going through it. So I see myself as a window, not a martyr, because otherwise I don't want to do this. But it kicks the shit out of you, if I could use that word, and I'll probably drop a few F-bombs along the way. And it's like... I've used this before. It's like having a sliver of your brain shaved every day. People think that Alzheimer's in general can happen quickly, and there are sure examples, and there are exceptions to everything, but this is a disease that can take 25 years to run its course. And
indeed,
and you know, Dr. Rudy Tanzi has said that the pathology can start when you're in your 40s, and so it's like getting the shit kicked out of you for 25 or 30 years trying to stay in the moment. And every day is a fight for me, and you just get exhausted, because it's not only the cognitive fight, but the brain is a control panel for the body, and my body's breaking down, and I have no feeling now. This is since we last talked, probably, where it's gotten worse from. You know, my feet to my knees and both legs, because brain signals, it's neuropathy, but brain signals aren't connecting. And the body, severe, my spinal stenosis, scoliosis is getting worse. I also have prostate cancer that I'm not treating, and my numbers just went up recently. But I don't want to go. There are a lot of beautiful nursing homes, but I don't want to. I had to take my family there, and you know, my parents, and I don't want to go to take my own family there. And recently was diagnosed with macular degeneration and glaucoma, which is slowly losing your sight, and there are now studies, and I cut up a frog in high school, so what do I know, but where they say that the eyes are the window of the mind, and there could be some kind of relation with macular degeneration and Alzheimer's. And The depression sucks, and I'm not proud to say this, but there are several times that I've tried to leave this planet. I'm not proud of that.
You thought of it, or you actually tried?
Well, no, I more than thought of it, and but there was one time fairly recently, and see, Alzheimer's will. It robs your I'm trying to be articulate here, but and I have my laptop open with notes, and you told me I couldn't do it, but I did it anyway.
Well, I actually said you can do it, but I want to tell people when you're doing it, because I want people to understand the difference between you, your thought process and your memory in real time, and the distinction between that and you consulting notes, which of course you have to do, but I want people to kind of get a sense of what's what.
It's a strategy that, I suppose you could call it a blessing, that as a journalist, you write everything down. And so it's instinct with me, but more and more, and we've talked about this before, 60% of my short-term memory can be gone in 30 seconds, not long-term, but it's just like, boom, it's gone. Or I tell you something and I forgot. And then I realize later that I repeated myself, and I think this is common with a lot of people in this disease, and then you feel like shit. You feel like you're a loser, stupid, you're boring people. And the rage is incredible. It's accelerated, and it's scaring my wife and my kids, and it's many times put my wife into tears. I have good friends in the police department, and I've stayed close with them, and you know, my priest and minister and stuff like that. I don't worry that I would ever hurt anyone, but I worry that I would hurt myself. I worry that there are times when I've been in so much rage that I wanted to punch a window. Just without even thinking of it.
You told me a story this morning as we were getting coffee, which the stories are very funny in retrospect. I understand, and you understand, that of course they're not funny. These are things are not funny as they're happening, but they're darkly funny as soon as you look back on them. And you were telling me that you were getting angry over virtually nothing. Yesterday, this is a story that ends up with the woman approaching you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I have notes here on it, but so you, okay. So the let me get to the funny part, because if you want to go through, this journey is about living with Alzheimer's. So let's say you got to do a quarter century, you better freaking learn to live with it.
Right.
Or you're gonna die. That's gonna happen anyway.
But... And let me say that really is one of the themes of what I admire about you so much, beyond your just being a mensch of a person and a beautiful soul and just a great friend. With this disease, you have adapted. You've adapted the shit out of your life to this disease, right? You have done all the things you need to do.
I'm going to show you some contrast here, because part of my journey is to try to educate people that the stereotypes of this disease are horribly wrong. It's not the end stage, it's the journey in getting there. But the depression recently, because we're facing bankruptcy, it's the typical journey for, I can't make what I could make before. And so I went down to my bank on Cape Cod, which was a good bank, is a good bank. And my account was down to almost nothing. And I went in to, and I have a term life insurance policy that is $1,500 a month. And I was afraid that would get canceled. It comes out automatically. So that's my retirement, but I really have to literally retire in the real sense. So I went and asked for a $10,000 bridge loan, and they all know me, and they said, Greg, we love you, but it's not easy to do this, and here's all this paperwork, and, you know, we have the rules, and everyone in the bank knows what's your deal. And so finally, it was a good guy, and I said, look, don't sweat it. I'll figure it out. I just didn't want to go there. It's just too painful for me. Whereas before, years ago, I'd walk out with the money in my pocket.
Hmm.
And so it was a rainy day. I'm not allowed to drive anymore. I've had to surrender my license, as I should, to the Department of Motor Vehicles. And my son had dropped me at the bank, and he was at the gym, and I was walking down to get a haircut. And it was raining. It was one of those really damp Cape Cod of fall days, just depressing as hell. And I was thinking about the fight that it takes to just be in the moment, and the ass kicking it takes on my body, and the depression I have to deal with, and now going into bankruptcy. And something inside my head, I believe in good and evil, and I couldn't get through life without my faith in God. I'm an imperfect man, but God is getting me through this. But the little voices in my head were saying, why don't you just end it?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just leave? You know, you're a piece of shit now. Why don't you just leave? And excuse me, it's just hard to talk about it, but this is the depression that you get into. So there was a car. It was at night. And it was coming, and the lights were on. I'm not proud of this, but maybe by telling the story, people will realize you just fight through this. And I started leaning into the headlight. And something, you could decide how you want to say it, pulled me back. I believe it was God, and I felt in my heart, I know life sucks, but it's not your time. We got other stuff to do. And I realized at that point that, and that's a couple times I've tried to do that, that I don't have the right to do that. And it was funny.
Someone else either.
No, and that's, but see, this is a judgment thing.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. My judgment is, my filter's gone, anyone who walks in this disease. And
right.
So people will say, first of all, Alzheimer's has nothing to do with how you look. It has nothing to do with your IQ. If God bless you with good looks or a high IQ, you're going to still have a high IQ. It's just the inability to connect the dots in your brain.
Right.
And so people, I get so pissed when people look at me and they go, oh, you look so good. And you know, I feel like saying, screw you. You know, I'll look better in a coffin than you do now. This disease, you know, look below the surface. The other thing is the contrast that we talked about is the loss of filter, the Larry David side, which can be funny if you want me to. I have notes I could tell you about. I don't want this to be a train wreck, but I don't want to sugarcoat it. Is that am I getting that point across?
Yeah, let's certainly get to one or two of those stories in a minute. Last night, I was able to come in early enough to see you give a talk at the Orleans Yacht Club, and there were must have been 60 or 70 people there. It was pretty packed. Small but beautiful room overlooking the water, and not a happy topic, but we're all happy to be together. And anyway, you were giving this talk, and you were reading excerpts of your book and reading from notes that you'd taken after your book and telling story after story, and it was very deeply meaningful and articulate and very, very funny. And I'm sitting there listening, and my brain said to me, it's as if God was hearing all of these millions of people down on earth talk about how shitty Alzheimer's is, and how on top of how shitty it is, none of the people who have the disease can articulate what's going on. So it's all a guessing game. It's shitty for the people who have it. It's shitty for the caregivers who are watching it. And there's all this mystery about what's really going on in there because none of them can really articulate it. And I've seen anyone in the Alzheimer's community knows what I'm talking about. It's just you lose the power to articulate it after a short while. You start to lose your facility with words and your memory goes, so you have a hard time kind of piecing together narrative events. And so that's one of the difficulties that makes it really almost impossible to communicate about the disease, because people are only listening to people like me talk about people like you. They're not listening to people like you who have the disease. And it's as if God kind of decided to kind of come down and pay attention to that whole scene and that whole kind of surreal and very dark scene about how no one can talk about what they're actually experiencing, and said, "Oh, you need someone to talk about it. All right, I get it. Yeah, all right, I'll give you one of those guys." Boom, Greg O'Brien, because you've got it, you're living it, and you are this exceptionally unique individual who can share with the rest of the world what you and all of the other people are going through.
I've learned through my mother, who's dead now, to speak and write from the heart, which I believe was a window that God, the universe, opened up for me. And the wonderful editors and mentors that I've had in my life that have taught me as a young man to write everything down. And it's instinct. And I journal 40 times a day. Anything ever happens, I hear in my heart, write it down, write it down, write it down, write it down.
You were writing as we were driving to the studio together this morning.
Yeah, and it's instinct. And when I did on Pluto, there's an expanded edition that just came out, and it was just translated also into Mandarin and for China distribution, and in also India and Italy. And I did that through 3,000-4,000 pages of notes, because in the moment I write it down and it's all on my computer, which is backed up on the, I don't know what the cloud looks like, but it's on the cloud.
Me neither.
But
I think it looks like a cloud.
I just wanted to be clear about that. It's funny that there's a scripture that I came across, but I think it applies to anyone, about Alzheimer's. And someone gave this to me the other day, that talks about this journey, and again, I'm not proselytizing, but I think people would relate to it, and I'm going to read from it. John 21:18, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and walked wherever you wanted, but when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and carry you to places you don't want to go.
Mm.
And someone who knows my journey sent that to me and said, stretch out your hands, because you'll be carried. And what I'm trying to tell people, again, whatever their spiritual beliefs may or may not be, stretch out your hands, you're not alone. And that's been part of my journey. But there are ups and downs along the way, and humor, faith, hope, and humor is part of it, but I've tried, because I'm Irish, to also, God has given me a good sense of humor. And when, as we talked about before, and you lose your filter, I become more like my hero, Larry David, who is an inspiration in my life because he says things that we all want to say, but we can't, and, we lose our filter.
And speaking of Larry David, we're being filmed right now by an old dear friend of yours, Steve Eccleston, who made
LA producer.
LA yeah. producer made his career in Hollywood.
And Andy.
And his partner, and I was going to say sidekick, just because I wanted to use the word sidekick, but it's not a fair word, but still it's a fun word to use. And Steve is, you know, this is a project from his heart, and he's doing what all of us are doing, which is he's trying to do something for you, Greg, but he's also trying to, as a media professional, as someone who communicates for a living, who tells stories for a living, trying to figure out a way to tell the story of Alzheimer's in a way that brings, that enlarges this conversation. And
he knows firsthand on it, because Steve and I grew up in Rye, New York, outside Manhattan. Steve's mom and my mom were friends, and they both died from Alzheimer's. And this disease has brought us back together after 50 years we hadn't seen each other.
So we're grateful for that. But I also just wanted to say that last night you showed me, before we watched a little bit of Jaws, the movie, and drank a little bit too much wine, you showed me the picture that Steve arranged to have signed for you of Larry David, who had seen something that you...
I gave him a copy of the book, and Steve had me do a little message video for him.
And it's actually, we should put the picture up on the website. We'll try to do that, because on WCAI's site, because if you think you know what the picture looks like, you don't. It's Larry David doing something just kind of goofy with his face and these glasses.
But he's wearing glasses like mine.
He is. And we don't know, and maybe we'll never know if he put on those glasses for this particular picture for Greg, but it just happens to actually be a extra funny comment on Greg, because he kind of makes himself look like Greg, and he wrote a nice little inscription, and that was great. So are we going to tell the Uber story now? Are we going to tell the story of the what you said to the old woman who had the misfortune of coming up to ask you for some advice?
Lead in a filter, and I am looking at my notes, and I had a bad day. And you never know when it's going to, but you feel it. It's I've described it before. It's sometimes it just comes on. Sometimes the rage just snaps. But there are times I'm not allowed to take my boat out anymore or drive, as I said. But when I used to take my boat out, you could see the fog coming up and it'd be behind you. And you would race to the shore because you know you'd be enveloped. And you can feel at times the numbness in the back. At least I do, and I've talked to others in this journey who, by the way, can talk just like me. It's not like anyone can't talk in this disease. I could bring thousands of people in here like me.
Not like you, but I'm not, I don't want to be misunderstood. I know that people can articulate to a certain degree what they're going through depending on, you know, where they are, but not like you, Greg. But
well,
go
thanks
ahead.
Thanks for the, but they've agreed that they feel the same, where you just feel the numbness creeping up the back of your neck, the top of your head, and
forehead, sure.
Yeah, down to the forehead, and it just overcomes like fog. And so I had one of those days yesterday morning. I was just very upset, and I'm not sleeping well now, but yet I don't want to get out of bed because that's the depression thing. So I have to have a plan to get out of bed. I don't, you know, there was anyone who saw that wonderful Glenn Campbell film. You know, there was a time in his life where his wife was a wonderful woman, really had to push him to get it. He just didn't want to go, you know, so it started where I don't drive, but I was walked to or rode my bike to a Starbucks, and I'm a Dunkin' Donuts guy, not a Starbucks guy, and I know people like Starbucks, but that's not me. And
I told you that I didn't want you to talk about Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks, because
I'm
such a coffee snob now.
I'm going to override you. I've always thought like at Starbucks, if they're going to hire someone, they in the interview process, they say, do you know how to make change? No. Okay, well, that's good. Do you like to talk to people behind the counter more than do you? Yep, I do. Okay, well, that's good. Do you like to work in a place where there are more people behind the counter than in line? Yeah. Okay, then you're hired. So, but then you get these people in the line, and this is Larry David kind of stuff, and long line. And this guy is with his girlfriend, and I think he thinks he's taking her to fine dining. And they get up to the front of the line, and everyone's sighing, and I'm going, holy shit, you know. And he's looking at the menu like it's the first time. And I'm going, holy shit, we got all these people here. And then he's saying, what do you think, honey? Do you want the caramel and the groans were, and so finally, and they're like hugging, and he didn't have his wallet out. And so finally, without thinking, I just yelled from the back of the line, hey, pal, cream or sugar? The whole line burst into laughter. People were high-fiving me. And so on the way, this is the filter. I didn't give a shit. So on the way out, he kind of, like, he wants to confront me. And I don't care. I'm going into my 70s. Go ahead, take a pop at me. But he walked by me, and I just said, hey, pal, this isn't fine dining. Take your girlfriend to the north end of Boston if you want to buy her a nice meal. So, but then I went to the dump. And at our dump, we have these bags that, because it helps with the waste, where you have to pay for the bag and you recycle and all that stuff. And we have yellow bags. And so Connor, my son, drove me in, and we ran out of yellow bags, and they're two black bags. So rather than sneak around, I went up to the attendant, lived in this town for 34 years, and I go, I got two black bags here, not two yellow bags, because we ran out of the yellow bags. It's okay. It's no big deal, right? I just want to throw them away. And the guy says, it is a big deal. So my filter, I go, well, what's the fucking big deal then? So we got into a shouting match over the black bags and the yellow bags. And then there's, so what happens is that in Alzheimer's, you ratchet up, you know, noise affects you, sounds, you can't, you just, it's all mass confusion. Then I notice there's this, I'm looking at my notes here, there's this poor little 80-year-old woman who's following me around. I was just exasperated, and this is terrible, okay? So now you realize that I'm just a shithead. I'm not a good guy. And I turned around, and I said to her in my loss of filter, I go, what the fuck do you want?
She's like 85.
She's 85.
She's like the kindly old
woman. I should be
woman.
Hugging her. And I said, what the fuck do you want? And she goes, oh, I just wanted to know, do you like your Jeep? I want to buy one. I go, it's a good fucking Jeep. I hope you buy it. Then I get back in the car, and Connor's going, we got to get out of here. So
there aren't too many people who can become abusive to an 85-year-old woman at a dump who just wants to know about your car.
If you want people to take a disease seriously, you have to get them to smile and laugh at it. Because if you can't laugh at an enemy, then it intimidates you. So can I read some notes from the Slavinsky story out in Scottsdale?
Let's do the Slavinsky story.
All right.
We'll see if Sean allows all these stories in one episode. Maybe he'll okay. Maybe he'll clip it and put it in another one. But let's get it out there.
All right. So,
ladies and gentlemen, the Slavinsky story.
Well, I'm reading because I wrote this down. So is that all right? I know you told me I can't read, but
no. Let's get it right. I want you to do what you need to do, but I want to be clear with our audience about whether you're reading or not reading so that they have a sense of
I'm reading.
Where this is coming from.
All right, so, and I wrote this down right in the moment after it happened, and we were in Scottsdale, and which was really cool. I was asked to speak to about 350 medical professionals, and this was a couple months ago, and it was a humbling, emotional experience, but I had another Larry David moment at the Scottsdale Hotel heading back to the airport, and my wife, who I love her, but I call her the warden because she's in charge, and she maybe let out too much rope and asked me to call an Uber to the hotel to take us to Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport. So I punched in the specifics to the Uber, noting that we were going to Scottsdale Airport, which is a small community airport. My brain didn't say Sky. I know Sky Harbor, but we go to Phoenix all the time. So, and I was, it was the wrong punch, and I was confused. And so the next thing I know, an Uber driver shows up at the hotel, and I was out of sorts, and asked me if I was a Slavinsky party. And I said, yep. And I said, it was just totally out of body. I yelled at Mary Catherine and Connor, said, pile into the car for the ride to the airport. So I'm in the front seat, and my wife and son are in the back. And 2 miles up the road, my wife realizes we're heading in the wrong direction. And the Uber driver's phone is now ringing off the hook, okay? So the Uber driver, Mary Catherine says, we're going in the wrong way. And I had plugged in the wrong location. So he seemed pissed, and he starts heading to Phoenix Airport. And Mary Catherine and Connor rolling their eyes. And then the Uber driver's phone keeps ringing. And he finally answers. And it's Slavinsky, wondering when the hell he's going to show up at the hotel. So the Uber driver is apologizing to this guy, the man on the phone. And then he turns to me in anger and says, you're not Slavinsky. And I said, sheepishly, I guess I'm not. And then in the back, Connor yells out, what the fuck, Dad? And Mary Catherine saying the same thing. So at this point, the driver had no choice. He's taken us to the airport. We're late. Then Mary Catherine's phone rings. It's the hotel. I've left my laptop, which is my brain, in the lobby. So the Uber driver now has to take us back to the hotel to pick up the laptop. And Slavinsky, by the way, has grabbed another Uber. And
the real Slavinsky.
Yeah, and he's really upset. And now Connor and Mary Catherine are yelling at me and apologizing profusely. And I sat quietly in the front seat. So this is just, you know, you when you go through that, your self-esteem goes further in the toilet. So just getting to the conclusion here, at the airport, I gave the driver a 50% tip and apologized profusely. And he turns to me and he said, not to worry. And I said, well, I really feel bad. And I said, you know, I deal with Alzheimer's. He looks me right in the eye. There's a direct quote. And he goes, I know. I could tell. It's in my family, too. Mm. And I'm afraid one day that it will attack me. You take care. And we hugged each other and went our separate ways.
What a sweet guy. And let me say that if the real Slavinsky is hearing this story,
yeah, on some, I'll be getting a call.
Some podcast, you know, venue somehow, please contact us, and because we'd love to hear your side of the story too. I'm sure there's a whole other.
He's pissed.
Well, he's probably gotten over it, and he's also probably a sweet guy. And when he understands that it was the disease that did this indirectly to him, he'll probably be very forgiving. But there's another part of this story out there that we haven't heard, and I think that's a nice way to kind of wind down here. We're running out of time. I wanted to say something else. We'll talk about it more in a future podcast. But in the last year and a half, I also lost my mother to dementia.
Right,
and it was a very different experience from what you've had, Greg. And she was not able to talk about it. She was just able to be, in fewer and fewer words, she was able to just kind of speak from her heart, but you had, you know, it was just a word here and a word there, and you just had to be in her presence. And if you weren't right there in front of her and looking at her face and really experiencing her full warmth, it was impossible to communicate with her. So like trying to talk on the phone with her in the last couple of years was just impossible. So we did manage to visit as often as possible and spend a lot of time with her, and she was an incredible woman, and I miss her.
Yeah. Sorry, David.
Thank you.
Tough.
So everyone in this room has lost a mother to dementia, and probably practically everyone listening to this. So it's,
well, that's the important thing.
It's
to
something we
talk
need,
about,
right? And it's something we need to, we're all in this, not only to talk about it and share about it, but to have, encourage other people to talk about it and fund research and stop this fucking disease.
You know, in just to in here. I in the last year lost 5 close friends of mine to Alzheimer's, and one of them, Steve Johansson, and in this disease he could still talk, and he wrote to his wife after he was diagnosed, just a couple sentences here, which I put in my book. This is from Steve, who's passed away. "I don't think I'll be at this desk much longer, trying now to build a positive vision for the future. I've always been able to put the pieces together to build beautiful, safe places for my family and friends. I suspect my tools will lay unused, unlayered, with ever-deepening layers of dust. But on a positive note, I know my loved ones will pull me up from inaction and dust me off again to take me out for fresh air, nature's beauty, and hugs that we all need at some time in the future." And his buddy, another friend of mine, Ken Sullivan, died recently of Alzheimer's. And just to the point here, he used to have beers with his friend Paul Boyce after his diagnosis, and he still could talk. And they talked about how unfair Alzheimer's was. And like the final scene in the movie Charlie, which is the Flowers book, Flowers of Algernon, they talked about the day when Ken wouldn't recognize Paul. "You won't see it coming, I'm reading from this," Paul told him, "but I will." Mm-hmm. "I know," replied Ken. "I'll just be along for the ride." Aren't we all in this disease? And anyone who's listening, we're all along for the ride, but let's all ride together.
Mm. Hear, hear. That's it for our show today. That's it for season one of The Forgetting. We will be back before you know it. Right. Thank you for listening, and thanks for sticking with us. There are many more stories to tell, and we need to stick with Greg as long as he will stick with us. A few notes here. This was my first time visiting WCAI in person. It was such a pleasure to be here. If you can close your eyes and think about Cape Cod and what a NPR studio would be like in Cape Cod, you know, it would be in a little tiny, cute little Cape Cod house in this cute, the gorgeous little town surrounded by the sea, and that's exactly what WCAI is. Whatever you are imagining, it's exactly what it turns out to be. I love being here. Our engineer here, as almost always, was Dan Tridle. Thank you, Dan, so much. The Forgetting is a production of WCAI in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, and WGBH in Boston. Our producer is the great Sean Corcoran. Thank you so much, Sean, for everything you've done over these last several years in helping us get to record this and doing some really beautiful editing from the bottom of your heart, and all the extra hours you've spent doing it, and all the incredible work in getting it finally on the air. We are so grateful to you, and it's so amazing to have you as part of our team. I want to thank our partner through the entire season, Cure Alzheimer's Fund, which Greg and I are both very, very close to and believe in deeply, and is an inspiration for us. And we do events with them constantly. And they are a unique, powerful organization that is dedicated to only one thing, which is stopping this disease. And they fund an incredible consortium of all-star researchers all around the world, constantly pushing the envelope of Alzheimer's research. And I've seen it, I've been honored to see it firsthand, and we're grateful for what they do and for also being our partner. Just two more things. Our theme music, as always, was composed and produced by Dr. Rudy Tanzi, who is also the chair of the research consortium at Cure Alzheimer's Fund. Yes, he is Superman. Thank you, Rudy, as always. And finally, Greg, I have to say this in person. You still owe me $100. Where is it?
Okay, I can fax it to you.
We're in person. Where's my $100?
I'll give you my Monopoly money. I got plenty of cash. It's just tied up in debt.
We'll work this out over there. Maybe we'll mug Dan in the engineer's booth for the $100, and we'll call it square after
run
that.
Run out to go to the bathroom, I think.
All right. Thank you all. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you, David. And thank you, folks, for listening. And God bless you.